Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, but also to welcome to the programme four dynamic and incredible personalities from the great world of show business. And they are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Sheila Hancock, and seated on my left, Graham Norton and Robin Ince. Please welcome all four of them. And as usual, I'm going to ask them to speak on a subject that I will give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And sitting beside me is Trudy Stevens. She will help me keep the score. She will blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And we're going to begin the show this week with Paul Merton. Paul, oh, the subject here, paranormal activity. 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
I went into a news agency the other day. And I said to him, are you interested in paranormal activity? And he said, I am indeed. I once had an aunt of an Australian girlfriend who reported all these things ringing around the room. And she said to herself, she said, you know, it has to be a poltergeist. It's the only logical explanation. Which I thought was a very funny line at the time, but nobody has done since. And the other day, I was walking towards Madame Marcarty's booth at the end of Brighton Pier. The woman sees all. The stars and the moon hold no mysteries for her. She has the intimate knowledge of your soul. And all for 7 and 6. It was a long time ago when I went. And
Sheila Hancock Jones.
Hasn't Brighton Pier burnt down?
Yeah, but not, but not when I paid 7 and 6. A long time ago, you see. Back in the 1960s.
So, a point on Paul, because it was an incorrect challenge, and he keeps the subject, and there are 24 seconds still available, starting now.
Harry Houdini, the world-known escapologist, was a great devotee of spiritual matters in the sense that he liked to uncover the way that the practitioners were going about their business. Two sisters in America in the 1870s invented what people now see as the movement that belongs to talking to people who are dead, and they were able to crack their bones in their fingers and their toes to make noises to convince their parents that there was somebody knocking at a table.
So in this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Paul Merton, so he's got 2 points at the end of that round. In fact, Sheila's spoken, but the others haven't. But Robin, would you like to begin the next round? And the subject, a lovely one, St. Valentine. Tell us something about that particular saint in this game, starting now.
St. Valentine is the patron saint of Chris de Burgh records. Every time that occurs, men will think, even though I've had a ghastly year and truly we don't really love each other, perhaps Lady in Red will say something to my darling wife, who is only my darling wife on the 14th.
Oh!
Bigamy!
I know, it's difficult, Robin. You haven't played the game quite as often as the others, so it's so easy. And Graham, you challenge first.
I sense some repetition. I was listening very, very carefully, and I think I got some repetition.
Right, so Graham, you have St. Valentine. You don't have it, but you have the subject. And there are 44 seconds available, starting now.
Being a saint nowadays is easy. Release a charity single, just be nice to somebody other than yourself, and you will be heralded as a saint. But in the olden...
Sorry, that was saint. And saint is certainly in it, yeah. I haven't done this game before. It's very tricky.
I've played it before.
Well, a long time ago, they didn't let me back, and now they've remembered why.
Yes, it was a long time ago, but yes, Robbie, you can repeat the subject on the card. Graham, an incorrect challenge, a point to you. 33 seconds available. St. Valentine, starting now.
St. Valentine, or in the French, St. Valentine, is the patron saint, if that's a thing, I'm pretty sure it is, of lovers and romance the world over. But what an awful end, Saint Valentine, or sometimes in other languages it could be Saint Valentine.
Poor challenge.
There was an elongation of vowels.
Yes, well, that's not in the rules.
No, but you should watch that because it could turn into a bad medical practice. It's a sort of condition, I should say.
There certainly was elongation of vowels. I have to decide when he gets so elongated that it's hesitation. I think on this time you were teaching on the point of hesitation, but didn't quite achieve it. It's all right. So you have an incorrect challenge, Graham, and you have 10 seconds still. St. Valentine's starting now.
The other day, I was in my local supermarket, and I was buying dog food. And in that aisle, I discovered a girl being dumped by her boyfriend. Does it...
Paul, challenge.
We haven't quite got to St. Valentine yet.
Romance!
Oh, supermarket dog food.
A girl was being dumped by her boyfriend. I was going to go on to say that was the least romantic thing I'd ever encountered.
Oh.
Well, you took a long time to get there.
10 seconds!
1/6 of a minute.
Listen, I gave you the benefit of the doubt on the other one, so I think Paul has it this time. You hadn't got there quick enough.
No, all right.
All right. So, Paul, you've got him with two seconds to go. Don't... Oh, you're upset.
That's how time works, I'm afraid.
You know how to work an audience, Graham. Right. There are 2 seconds still available for you, Paul, on St. Valentine's, starting now.
So I dumped this woman. She ended up crying in the supermarket next to the dog food. Oh!
So once again, Paul was speaking to Whistle Wen, gained that extra point. He's one ahead of Graham Norton in that order. Robin and Sheila have yet to establish the points. And Sheila, we'd like to hear from you now. And the subject is stationery. Mm. So an interesting subject, many ways you can take it. But speak on the subject now. 60 seconds starting now.
Well, I'm not sure which stationery we are talking about, because there is the lack of movement, or is notepaper, pens and things that you use for writing. In fact, they are linked. Strangely enough, I'm doing a carol service at St. Joan's, and the dean, or whatever he calls himself there, told me that the word for the paper version comes from the fact that there used to be peddlers selling things, but next to St. Paul's, they stood and started a shop and were stationary. So that's how it got its name. I love beautiful notepaper. I wish people still wrote instead of sending...
Graham?
Notepaper came up twice.
Yes, notepaper came up.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I feel awful. In myself.
That's the game. Yeah. I don't mind, Graham.
No, okay. Graham.
Yeah. Wait.
Get you.
Correct challenge, Graham, so you have a point. 17 seconds.
17 start. Seconds?
17.
Mm. On stationery.
Yeah. On stationery. It's a broad subject.
It's very broad.
As Sheena said, you can take it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And you drive, so you...
Don't help him, Nick. Go on, get on with it.
No, he doesn't need help. Does he? 17 seconds, starting now.
Your stationery tells people so much about you. Flowers are a no-no, I would say.
Sheena challenge.
A no-no. You tried to pretend it was only one, but it was no-no.
Right, well, listen, Sheila. You've got your subject back. You've got 10 seconds. Stationery starting now.
There is a beautiful shop in Bond Street where...
Paul challenge.
Did we have shop before? Setting up a shop at St. Paul's Cathedral?
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
We're not sure. We're doing an impression of an underground train at the moment. Yeah. We're not sure.
I say he sold things.
You might have said stall, actually, before. Did you say stall?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I've given the benefit of the doubt to Graham and to you, so I give it now to Sheila and say you have 7 seconds on stationery starting now.
In this particular establishment works the wife of the Prime Minister, and she sold me some...
So Sheena Hancock was in speakers of Whistle Wen, gained the extra point, and she's creeping up on our two leaders, Paul Merton and Graham Norton.
I really want to hear the end of that sentence. What did she sell you? A nuclear bomb? What?
No, embossed postcards for my son-in-law.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Was she behind the till?
She was. It was before he became Prime Minister, but she was there, and she was lovely. I thought, what a lovely lady, I thought. And then I saw her photo, and she was Mrs. Prime Minister.
In her own right.
Right.
Very feminist thing to say, isn't it? For a working gal.
Do you two want to carry on with the conversation?
Sorry. It was interesting.
Right. Graham, we're actually with you to begin now.
Okay.
And the subject is 1984. You know a lot about that, I'm sure, but speak on it. 60 seconds, starting now.
In 1984, the local economy of San Francisco suddenly started to boom because it was in that year that I turned 21, which is coincidentally the age you can buy drink. Now, in 1985, the same... Oh, now, I nearly said a word that I've already uttered, mm-hmm. but I mustn't do that because of mm-hmm. the rules of the game. 1984 is also a novel. Mm. A very good...
Sheila Chandler.
So,
Sheila, correct challenge, 34 seconds. Tell us something about 1984, starting now.
George Orwell wrote this magnificent book about Big Brother and Winston, and it became a television programme which terrified the living daylights out of me. It's about...
Robin challenged.
Well done.
Hesitation.
That was a hesitation, Robin, yes.
Was it a hesitation?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, I don't... I'm really sorry. I couldn't... Oh, this is terrible. There's something you've... about buzzing in with someone who's been in a Stephen Sondheim musical which just makes me feel really bad.
21 seconds
That'd
you've
be
got.
Right, you'd be right.
Robin, tell us something about 1984, starting now.
I'm not sure which my favourite Winston Smith is. Peter Cushing is, of course, very good, and I once wanted to bid on his driving gloves, which were in an auction in Whitstable, but I was too late, and Mark Gatiss got them instead. Then there's Edmund O'Brien, who starred in DNA. DNA... No! You're quite right, you're quite right. And do you know what? Another panel, I'd have got away with that, but...
But you've got three of the seasoned regulars against you, Robin, I'm afraid.
It's a rotten
so
game.
So, Paul,
isn't it?
You challenge first.
A repetition of DNA, surprisingly.
Yes. 4 seconds are still available, Paul. 1984, starting now.
Do you keep stationary? You know I have to wiggle my arms every so often. I said that to a woman in 1984, and what a great laugh we had.
So, Paul Merton, speaking as a whistle, went and gained an extra point. He's now taken the lead just marginally ahead of Sheila Hancock and Graham Norton, and then Robin brings up the rear. And, Paul, we're back with you to begin. And the subject is a little bizarre, but it is what's fun. Anything you like. That's the subject. Talk on that, starting now.
Antihistamine tablets, smoked salmon, the Duke of Marlborough. These are three things that I absolutely love and adore. I will travel endless miles to find any one of them. Other things I like, the Sound of Music, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, cartoons from the 1940s, Woody Allen films from an earlier period than the ones he's making now, and I suppose radio shows such as Just the Minute. There is no other programme like this. It's marvellous to see so many people come here and sit for free on a cold winter's night in the middle of London with no other reason other than to listen to this delightful concoction. Devised by the wonderful Ian Messiter, over the years, I suppose it's become one of my favourite things.
Graham challenge.
No, that repetition of suppose.
Could be.
Yes.
Oh, I like that. Someone in the audience going, yes.
Graham, correct challenge. 20 seconds. Anything you like, starting now.
I'm slightly confused because this game is difficult enough without being given the subject anything you like. Because, of course, the things that we're given to discuss for a minute are so niche and specific and therefore difficult that we often complain about that. But in this...
Robin, you challenge.
I may well be wrong there, but I think there were two difficult. Yeah. I think you've doubled difficult.
I could have. I could have. I wasn't listening.
Robin was listening well. He was right beside you. And you did repeat the word. So, Robin, a correct challenge, and you have 3 seconds on anything you like, starting now.
Being a vegetarian, one of the things most often said when looking at a menu is there anything you like?
So, Robin... Oh, sorry. One of the crisps I had before I came up.
Crisps is a showbiz euphemism.
Peruvian flavoured crisps.
So, Robin, you've now got done moving forward. You're equal with Sheila in third place, then Graham, and then Paul in that order, moving upwards. And, Robin, we're back with you to begin. And the subject is Marco Polo. Marco Polo, good subject. Talk on it, 60 seconds, starting now.
Many people consider that Marco Polo was the first European to arrive at China. It was such a shock for the people of that country that when they saw him, they all jumped in the air, which created an earthquake in San Francisco, which was fine because no one lived there at that point in the 14th century. Marco Polo was known really as a travelling salesman, so he would go from country to country saying, "Do you want any nylons?" Country to country! Not again!
They almost let you get away with it, Robin. out of generosity, but Sheila couldn't. Sheila,
sorry. And also nylons. Mm. There weren't nylons in Marco Polo's time.
No.
Deviation.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ring Simon Sharma and check.
And also, to stop any letters coming in, it was actually the 13th century, not the 14th.
Oh, I thought it was... Oh, Nicholas was there. Essentially, he was Marco Polo's travel agent. China's very nice this time of year.
35 seconds are available still, Sheila, on Marco Polo starting now.
Oh, Marco Polo, I think, met Genghis Khan somewhere along his route. There was a boy at my school who was always eating polos, and his name was Mark, so we called him Marco Polo. I am desperately trying to think of something else to say about...
Poor challenge.
Well, it was a humanitarian gesture on my part.
But have you got a challenge within the rules of justice?
Well, no, she quite hesitates. So no, I don't think I have, really.
No? So Sheila gets a point. Just, yeah. For an incorrect challenge. 18 seconds with you, Sheila. Marco Polo, starting now.
I do happen to know that he was born in Venice, or is that somebody else? He wasn't born in Venice. I'm talking rubbish. Who buzzed?
I don't know.
Yeah, you might. Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, yeah. And what's your challenge?
He wasn't born in Venice.
Oh, God, have I still got the same?
Yes, Sheila, you fool.
Yeah, he was, and you've still got 13 seconds, if you want them, on Marco Polo, starting now.
He travelled across Asia and was incredibly brave. I think he went on a camel.
Robin, challenge.
I have no idea whether he went on a camel or not, but it's just really nice to drag this out, isn't it? To every now and then throw what looks like a life belt and then pull it back away again.
Have you got a challenge within the rules of just a minute?
Well, I felt that the camel was frankly conjecture on your part.
Well, you can't prove that he didn't go on a camel. It's more than likely he went on a camel.
According to the records, he didn't go on a camel.
No.
What?
Nicholas... Nicholas distinctly remembers booking a sedan chair. When you get to China, ask for the sedan chair. It'll be there outside China Station.
Well, Sheila, you don't want the subject. I think I'm going to give it to Robin and tell him he got 7 seconds on Marco Polo, starting now.
Marco Polo is best remembered for his wonderful hat, which was yellow and purple and brown in some...
Graham challenge.
Well, he's not best remembered as anything, apparently. We know nothing about him. We certainly don't know... We certainly don't know that he had a colourful hat.
No.
I mean, we sort of know he went to China. That's about it.
A polo hat.
What's a polo
hat? It was huge in the early 80s on the club scene. Everyone had a Marco Polo hat.
He's not right. He's bluffing. Come on. He was known for his travels and so forth and going over to China and coming back again. So he wasn't best known for his hat.
It's not like IQ or QI or whatever it is it? If we are fools.
What's the opposite of the brain of Britain?
It's shaming. I hope my grandchildren don't listen.
Idiots of the honours.
And I'm not Stephen Fry either.
Are you not?
No.
Despite his love of crisps. Mm.
That's a little in joke. I do enjoy crisps.
How many seconds? Just tell me, how many seconds?
1 second.
Oh,
this is shameful disgrace.
So, Graham, 1 second on Marco Polo starting now.
Italy's an absolutely gorgeous country. Why would you leave?
Well, what an interesting situation. Graham was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's equal now with Sheila Hancock in the lead. She got so many points on the subject she didn't want. And then comes 1 point behind Paul Merton, and then 1 point behind Robin Ince. Anybody want to talk about Marco Polo?
That was shocking, because you've got to think what that man did was so amazing, and how terrible that none of us know anything about him.
He probably did go on a camel.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Yeah. He probably was a camel, you're right.
No, you didn't
lose it. Born in Croatia.
Oh, now you said it!
But nobody said he was born in Venice, did they?
Yes.
Yes, Nicholas, you did.
I
think he was living
in,
he was born in Croatia, but he was living in Venice when he left.
I've got a feeling we've given the subject to the wrong people. It should have been given to you. Very knowledgeable.
And Sheila, we're back with you to begin commemorative bust.
Oh, Lord.
Can you talk...
Thank God it's not Marco Polo.
Can you talk about commemorative bust, starting now?
I've never understood the point of commemorative bust. Why don't they do the whole figure? It's extraordinary that they choose to show the chest down to the waist. Maybe it's to show the status of the character. For instance, if it's got a bit of a toga on, then you know it's Roman. If a tie, then possibly a businessman or tits. Bosoms, and it came out. I'm sorry. Anyway, he buzzed. What did you buzz?
I thought it was hesitation, but I was also trying to maintain the reputation of this show. And the BBC in general, I believe.
But you did have a correct challenge, Robin, and you have 38 seconds on commemorative bust, starting now.
One of my favourite moments involving a commemorative bust is with David Icke. I was watching a show in which he was about to debate in the Oxford Union, and he looked at a bust of Ted Heath and said, I once interviewed Ted Heath, and halfway... And do you know what? It was David Icke what made me do that. It was all them lizards in my brain suddenly became active.
Robin.
Sorry.
I don't understand what you're talking about. Graham, you had a correct challenge for repetition. 24 seconds available. Commemorative bust starting now.
One of my favourite stories involving a commemorative bust is a phrase I've never heard uttered aloud before, but now it's been said twice, but not by me, so it's not repetition thus far. I'm sort of with Sheila on this idea of commemorative bust, except it is handy for displaying on a table, whereas if it had feet, it would take up more room. Unless it's...
So,
a commemorative bust with just feet would be very odd.
It'd be a statue.
A statue, oh, yeah, I see.
So,
yes, Graham, now you've taken a very strong lead at the end of that round. Right. We're moving into the last round. And in ascending order, Robin is just in fourth place. And then 1 point ahead is Sheila Hancock. And then 1 point ahead is Paul Merton. And just 2 points ahead is Graham Norton. And Paul, we're back with you to begin. And the subject is my best ideas. 60 seconds starting now.
One of my best ideas is an invention called Shocker Bloke, where women are allowed to pass small electrical shocks to the men in their life to make them do what they want to.
Robin Challenge.
Sorry, I don't know. Is Shocker Bloke separate, as in shock dash bloke?
Yes.
Or is it a full
it's like
shock?
Shocker Bloke, one word.
Right, okay, so double shock?
Well, I don't know, because we've never heard of the word before, have we?
Well, no, what I'm saying is that if it's not shocker bloke, which would be one word, the shocker bloke system, then it wasn't repetition, because one was shock and one was shocker bloke. But if it's shock bloke, then I'm not entirely certain. So to be fair, I'm very unsure on
Can
this.
Can I just say, a lot of pressure on Nicholas right now.
I know, there's a lot of pressure on me.
Can we change the subject to Marco Polo?
Because I feel like we didn't cover that subject properly.
No, not enough.
The intellect in this show is unbelievable.
The word's invisible.
As Robin
mistake, yeah.
As Robin hasn't played the game as often as the others, I will give you the benefit of the doubt, Robin, and say that you have 52 seconds on my best ideas. Now.
One of my best ideas was doing a rock opera at 2 o'clock in the morning in a field in Suffolk based on Guy N. Smith's Crabs on the Rampage.
Graham Challenge.
That's no one's best idea.
No, honestly, if I show you all my other ideas...
No, not doing it would have been a better idea than that.
But listen, I've heard you on the television and the radio, so I know you've probably had much better ideas than that. Okay. So I've given you the benefit of the doubt just before. I'm going to give it to Graham. Graham, 41 seconds on my best ideas starting now.
41 seconds seems a long time to discuss my best idea, which I...
Paul Challenge.
It's shorter now.
Paul, it was such a lovely interruption and was so amusing. We're going to give you a bonus point for that.
Thank you very much.
Graham, you were interrupted, so you still have my best ideas. And 36 seconds starting now.
You know, I like to think that somewhere in time I will have my best idea. I just haven't discovered it yet. I see it in my future at some point. Who knows? Perhaps in the next intervening seconds, I can hardly hazard how many are left.
Robin Challenge.
Well, it was kind of all over the shop, and it also involved... I felt it was nasty. Of course, you've had some ideas already, and they merely meant you might have a better one, but you've already had one of your best ideas.
Robin,
it might just turn out to be shoddy later.
Robin, in other words, it was hesitation.
Oh, yeah, hesitation would do, yeah.
Now, you see, you lose it, but you get it back again, so you get the point. Mm. And you've got 15 seconds. My best idea starting now.
How big...
Oh, Challenge.
I was going to say crepuscular.
Well, why? You should have done.
Yeah. I like Sheila. Well, you should have done.
It's these moments of doubt that drive us. Yeah. Hesitation.
Yes, well done, Paul.
Yes.
You have 13 seconds on my best ideas, starting now.
As I walked into the Institute, I could see all the scientists looking up at me. They realised that my idea would revolutionise the art of history and science combined. They said, what you've managed to do with this milk bottle and that half a pound of raspberry jam...
Well, there couldn't be a fairer result. Almost equal all along the line. Only 1 point separated all four of them. Sheila was just in fourth place. One ahead was Robin. One ahead of him was Paul. And one ahead of him was Graham Norton. So we have to say, Graham, you are the winner this week. It only remains for me to say thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Sheila Hancock, Robin Ince and Graham Norton. I thank Trudy Stevens, who's helped me with the score, blown her whistle so elegantly when the 60 seconds have elapsed. We thank our producer, Talusha Gilani. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're deeply indebted to this lovely audience here in the Radio Theatre, who cheered us on our way magnificently. So from the audience, from the panel, and from me, Nicholas Parsons, thank you, and tune in again the next time we play Just a Minute!